Welcome to That Makes Total Sense, a podcast dedicated to exploring God's generosity and justice. I'm Alexis Busetti, a Christian aiming to ask good questions and encouraging you to do the same. Every one of us is wired by God to live out generosity and justice, but the how sometimes eludes us. That Makes Total Sense is a way for us to get together, posture ourselves as learners, and challenge one another to practice generosity and justice in a tangible way every day. Okay, so this really is so much fun for me, Laura, because I told you before we started recording that anybody in Texas, I don't know, maybe I'm trying, you can tell I'm not a native Texan because I feel like maybe it's my like subconscious or unconscious way of trying to like shrink Texas, but I'm like, we're all neighbors, you know, it's not that big. We're all neighbors. And so since you're in Texas too, I said, you know, hey neighbor. And oh my goodness, I feel like we really are neighbors though. Like we have so many geographical and also like seminary connections, that it feels really fun to meet. Like, I want to say like a mutual friend almost. But we got connected through the book. So thanks so much for being on the podcast with me.
Absolutely. Thanks for inviting me.
So I am here with Laura Bagdasarian Murray, who has written a wonderful book called Becoming a Person of Welcome, The Spiritual Practice of Hospitality. And excuse me. Oh, I hope that this cedar here in Austin isn't going to get me this whole conversation, but we'll see. Laura, I want to start off by kind of saying hospitality is something that it's something that I was raised with. I think we'll talk about that possibly a little bit more. My grandmother and grandfather on my dad's side, I ended up writing something about them that I ended up reading as an addition to a eulogy at my grandmother's funeral service. But it was really just about their hospitality, that really everyone who went into their home felt welcomed, like felt like an old friend. You know, I had a friend when I was a young mom once say to me, I had like all my kids are really close together in age, and there's a lot of them. There's four. That was more than I grew up with. And so I walked in and I'm afraid that I've got like all these toddlers and I'm nervous that they're going to mess things up. And my friend said, they just let them go upstairs and play with my kids. It's fine. And she said, there's nothing precious in that space. Hmm. And to me, it felt like her way of saying, I swear you're not going to mess anything up. Like you have a fear that you're going to mm-hmm. impose, that you're going to mess something up. We'll talk about boundaries later, probably in the podcast, it wasn't that there wasn't anything precious at my grandparents' house. It was just that it felt like all the things that were there, precious or not, people were welcome, to be around. And that felt really special. Fast forward to, I'm in college, young adult. We take these, okay, you're at least maybe evangelical adjacent. We took some spiritual guests, gifts inventory kind of things. Mine pops up, gift of hospitality. I think, okay, yes, I've received that kind of from my grandmother. But even in all of that, the definition for me felt a little narrow. And you talk about that some in the book, and I hope we'll get there. But I just want to put that out and say what we're going to cover today, what you cover in the book, isn't really maybe the narrow slice of hospitality that many of us are accustomed to thinking about when we hear that term. You know, I was, you know, you walk in, you think, I'm dating myself. Is this Donna Reed? You know, like, is this the kind of thing where we are expected to have something when people walk in the door, you can have tea and cookies or something like this, but this is a much broader way to talk about hospitality. And it is more than just a logistical or a physical thing. Even the subtitle indicates this is a spiritual practice, and you're a spiritual director. And so I'm hoping that, that you can bring all of that in. And so I just kind of wanted to give us like a little intro to that to say, I think we're going to talk in a much broader way about that term. What do you think?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And even some of the story that you shared, there are elements of true hospitality within them. So your grandmother saw people as precious and they felt that way. And your friend gave you a way of being a guest, of just calming your anxiousness about being a guest. And that's what hospitality is as well. And so even in your story, there are elements of it that are there. And yeah, some of us grew up with this idea that hospitality was limited to those with a spiritual gift of it, or a particular gender, or somebody who has a certain type of home, or all the time in the world to clean the house, or whatever it is. And it kind of became limited and narrowed to specific people or types. And then also, it started to be defined, at least in the some of the American culture, not all of ours, maybe, as entertainment. And so it was limited to entertainment. And what we see in scripture is that hospitality is far more than entertainment, though it can be fun. It's about restoration, it's about caring for our neighbor, and it's also about holding people as the most precious thing. And so wherever you go, you can carry with you this thought that this person is made in the image of God. They might be hurting. They might have something to celebrate. How can I go and enter into their world and love them and meet them where they are? And so it's something that we can carry with us wherever we go, and we can cultivate it. And I call it a spiritual practice because it takes practice. You know, it takes practice to notice. It takes practice to make your schedule so that you can slow down and be attentive. And so, and I call it a practice too because, you know, we won't do it well, or we'll learn from it, or we'll get stronger at it. And so, hospitality is much more than what it's been limited to. It includes it, but it's much more than that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You start the book off by talking about your family, and their immigration story. And I think that it's really important for a whole host of reasons. But I also want to say it felt very familiar to me, and I received it as warm, partially because I grew up with a Persian uncle, and he was married on my Hispanic side of the family. And so going to their house felt like something very different than going to other members of my family, whether it was on my Hispanic side or on my white side. Going to their house felt just very different and wonderful. Since I was a young adult, my husband and I have also spent, a decent amount of time in the Middle East. I don't know, maybe 8 or 10 trips or something like that, and experienced a similar kind of regional hospitality. There are some themes that are similar, and you talk about that too in the book. So I just want to kind of throw that out there to say that felt so familiar, and like when I was reading parts of your book, I was sitting in my aunt and uncle's living room and
I
imagining
love that.
the rice and the tea and, sitting on Persian rugs and playing with my cousins and experiencing that kind of wonderful hospitality all over again. And so that felt like a real personal gift in reading this. But again, you talk about it in including that kind of thing, but also in a much broader sense. And one of the things that really got me, and that I've participated in a project on this as well, but you use this phrase, that home is chosen for some people. And so I'd love it if you can elaborate, share what you would like to share about your family's immigration story, and also what that phrase means to you and how that affects how you think about and practice hospitality.
Yeah, thank you. And I love that. I love that you could relate to that part of the
Oh, it
book.
was so fun.
Yeah. Well, for my family, their story included the means to be able to immigrate, a time period in which it was easier to immigrate. So when some people immigrate or move a lot for opportunity, and they were able to. Right. My dad came over with a bunch of friends, and they kind of got a lay of the land, and then spouses and kids came later and joined them, but you had to have financial means. It was a time when the country they were coming from, there was openness for them to leave the country and to create home. And so when they came here, they were choosing to create a new way of being. A new home. Now, that's not every immigrant story. A lot of immigrants don't choose home, but it is chosen for them. When you think about refugees who don't want to leave their home and who love it and who have experienced the injustice and just whatever, all the things that they experience, right? That they have to flee home. And so that's a very different narrative. That's a very different story. I even think about, decades ago, where Africans were taken from Africa and brought to the United States. I mean, they did not get to choose home. And so you find these cultures and stories and peoples where home, they don't get to choose it. And you can even take it to a local level as well. You think about those who are in the foster care system. You think about even kids, who are raised in houses, I would say, of a lot of brokenness and pain, and they are there for a while, for whatever time period. So sometimes home is chosen for you. Because you don't have the power or the agency to choose it. And so I think when we talk about immigrants in general, that's a very broad umbrella. Or when we talk about home, I think there's a very broad umbrella because some people have chosen it, some people haven't. Some people have to go searching for it, some people find it in small pockets, and some people don't find it. And so when I think about home in general, I think how can we, as the people of God, create places, maybe even just for a few moments, or maybe for longer periods of time, where somebody can say, I can choose to be in this home. This is a home in which I am welcome. This is a cho home where I can be. This is a home where I'm seen and I'm valued. And I have people who are advocates for me and who will fight for me because sometimes they've been fighting for themselves for a long time. So that's just a bigger understanding of, I think, immigration, but also beyond that, of the idea of home and choosing it and it being chosen for one.
Will you talk about some of the particularities, the ones that I referenced that felt warm to me, and just kind of how that started to shape and form not just your idea of home and being welcomed, but maybe hosting and hospitality?
Yeah. So when the home I grew up in was very communal, it was a very communal culture. And that meant whenever somebody showed up, everybody stopped what they were doing. Everybody turned to the guest. Everybody made a sacrifice of some kind. If we were eating, there wasn't enough food. You just either ate or well. Let's just say in our Armenian home, there was always plenty of food because, then, and I think in other cultures too, you would make batches of food and eat off of it for a few days. So there was always plenty of food. And so you always sacrificed or surrendered something. And this often would conflict when I became a teenager. I was like, well, I don't want to stop what I'm doing to go say hi to my dad's friend and sit or offer them some tea or, like it really came into conflict in those moments. And it came into conflict for me as well, because I had the American culture that was outside my door that was far more individualistic, and then the communal culture internally, inside the house. And so that was a real tension for me that I didn't even know I was carrying. I just knew those values were conflicting. But it did help to shape me in ways that I didn't even realize it. Like, I often will talk with, and I'll say the word we, and every once in a while people will say, who's we? And because I'm assuming a community that I'm a part of, I'm assuming I'm a part of a people. And it's just interesting. And I had never noticed that I did that, and that it automatically, I would carry with me this posture of, well, we, or inclusion, or collaboration, or discussion, or things like that. And so I think that kind of blended even into my adult years, and I had no idea about it. The other way it did it is you just were always expectant that interruptions were normal, that you would have to stop what you're doing, you would have to make way for someone. And so interruptions were a normal part of life. Now, I will say, admittedly, I don't like interruptions. I'm a goal setter. I am a, like, I want to get something done. And I'm like, don't interrupt, because it takes so much energy to start back up what I was working on. And so that is really hard for me. That's when I'm like, ooh, I love this individualistic culture. And I love going that way. But so it's just those things that come up within us. And so I think those couple of things of just being able to be interrupted, I think also it impacted the way the word pace comes to mind. Like, that I grew up also with my grandmother in the home as well. And then I also have a sister who has special needs. And so both of those things kind of slowed down your pace a little bit. I mean, my grandma, I mean, she was strong and healthy, but she walked more slowly. And so you had to walk a little more slowly. You know, you have someone with special needs in your family, you move more slowly. And so even beyond our culture, I think that family dynamic also caused me to be aware when other people didn't feel like a part, or other people were excluded because they weren't either keeping up or they couldn't. Again, this runs again against some of my wiring, which likes to go and move and not have anybody stand in my way. But I think that has also helped me to be more of a person that sees others, that slows down for others, that values others, and it kind of pushes back my desire to just go, go, go.
Yeah, a couple of things. When you said we'll say sometimes, I don't know, my family likes these like bizarre Disney movies. I feel like that are a little bit underrated, but there's a scene in Wreck-It Ralph where he's like talking we and the driver that she was like, what do you mean we? Are you talking like the royal we? What is that? You know, so sometimes I'll catch myself too saying we, and then I'm like, I mean like the royal we, you know. But when you're talking about pace, but also the communal versus individualistic. What came to my mind was, it is very, if we combine kind of that individualistic American value also with the productivity, but also with this like this stretched thinness, not really a word, but I'm like those like the pace and the communal. Only we can only incorporate those, I guess, well, if we have enough margin to do that. But or sharing, even like you're talking about, like time, space, energy, resources, like all of those things, if we don't have margin, if we're always like up against the limits in all of those things. I'm imagining like that makes practicing hospitality well just almost impossible to do. If you're always cutting it close, or you're always in a hurry, or you're always trying to be there, like you can't slow down for like those things are going to be in conflict. So I don't know, it just made me think like how important living with margin, even at like kind of all the time, like as a base level, so that, because I think that's part of it, as I'm trying to learn how to be interrupted well better I'm also not good at it. And I had a professor the other day say, like, I was the one in my class who like raised my hand and asked the stupid question, you know, and I'm like, I'm so sorry to interrupt. And his response to me was, I love interruptions. And I was like, ooh, that would be a lie coming out of my mouth. Like if I said that, that would be a lie. But how do I get, maybe I don't get all the way there where I love being interrupted, but maybe I can move toward more flexibility, more margin, those kinds of things that invite an ability to practice hospitality rather than, you know, kind of the opposite of that.
And as you're sharing that, Alexis, one of my thoughts is when we invite interruption or allow those things, how do we cultivate having a posture that says, God might have something for me here?
Yes.
God might have a gift for me in this. God might want me to receive something. And so I think the flip side of this productivity is that we miss out on some really beautiful things, not just for others, but for ourselves. And I was in pastoral ministry for many years, and pastors and ministry leaders do this, but a lot of people do this. I mean, parents do this. We're so busy checking off the to-dos. We're so busy doing the things that need to get done that we miss out on the joy of things. And we really miss out on the gifts that God has for us. And I think when we think about hospitality, sometimes we think about it as an event or a to-do, and we are unable to receive the joy and the gifts within it for us. Then we really are missing out on one of the greatest things, part of it. And in the book, I talk about how hospitality is this beautiful exchange of gifts. And that as hosts, yes, we're offering things to others, or as the one who is, has, let's say, control the conversation or the environment of the meeting or the environment of the house, that there are times that when we slow down, we actually receive the people around us. We receive the beauty of what they have to give. We receive seeing the insights that they bring. So we miss out, really. And it's not just the guests, it's not just others that miss out. We miss out. And I think that's another piece too of hospitality, is that there is this exchange and we miss out on it.
Yeah, no, that's really good. I want to go back just a tiny bit to what you said about hosting and kind of, you know, when you have control over the conversation or when you have control over the environment. Because I felt super, not I didn't feel super torn, but I did feel a little torn reading this part, which I think was part of the point probably. Thinking about how sometimes when, and I've thought about this for years, but I'm just like, how do I kind of, I don't know, how do I kind of explore living into this in a different way? But just how sometimes it just feels easier to host, you know, it just, and especially when I would say, especially when my kids were younger, but even now, you know, there's a family, we're a family of six. And my kids are amazing, but I do just kind of feel like we're a lot. You know, like I'm a lot, like just me. And then here we are, like we're everybody, and it's, you know, I don't know. We're loud. I usually say like we leave quite awake, you know, like when we are places. And anyway, and this is probably somewhat more in my imagination, or I'm thinking about when everyone was, you know, under the age of six. But sometimes it just kind of is easier, feels easier to host. And I have, yeah, over the years, I've encountered a lot of texts like yours and encounters with people and all this, and saying, how can I be like, I don't know, a more hospitable guest? I mean, you know, like, but or think about, why do I think it's easier to host. And I think part of it is, yeah, because I can kind of control the environment. Even like, well, if it's time to put a kid to bed, their bedroom is upstairs. That's easy. That's an easy thing to do, or whatever it might be. Even as something as logistically, like I have a pretty strict dietary constraint. Gosh, it's just easier for me to cook then, than have to. I feel like I'm imposing and all of this kind of other stuff. But yeah, so I start to ask like why. And when I'm reading your book and I'm like, oh, because there's that kind of some power there when we're the host. Yeah, I didn't love reading that at first. It felt hard. It felt really hard to read that, but I'm so glad that I did. And I'm hoping that you'll talk about it in a better way than me, because as you can tell, I'm still processing that. But yeah, maybe what kind of dynamic are you talking about when you're talking about like power dynamics in hospitality, but especially as the host?
Yeah, it's not something we think about really. You just like, I just host and I do this and I'm more comfortable and I can, manage things and, just it makes sense. And it's okay. It's okay. I would say being a guest is incredibly vulnerable. Like it can be incredibly vulnerable.
Yes.
You're opening yourself up to unknowns. You're opening yourself up to maybe something that might be uncomfortable. You're opening yourself up to somebody else's direction and guidance. And if you're used to like having to run, a home, I mean, I don't know what your role is in your family dynamics, but like if you're running a home and you're like, okay, I'm not running this anymore, I mean, there are things that you have orchestrated to get down. I mean, there are def so you're losing. By being a guest, you're letting go of control, you're letting go of comfort, and you're letting go of the known. So you're letting go of a lot. So I just want to say that. You're
Can
letting.
I interrupt? Because this is like I'm having this is so awful. I interviewed another spiritual director earlier. This it was last week, I guess. And I'm like, this is not good. You guys just have there's something about spiritual directors. You just like I think it's I don't know. It's uncanny. I'm like, quit pulling stuff out of me. But I'm like, okay. But when you're saying that, the and I'm like, I'm feeling what I think the intent is. Like you're talking to Alexis, you're talking to people who are used to hosting, right? This is a kind of, but immediately I started having this wild, it's like, okay, I know it's 101, okay, but slow to process here, where I'm like, oh my goodness. I really think I have not thought about that enough, how people must feel in those ways, or might feel in those ways when they come to my house.
Oh, yeah.
I think, oh no, do and not know that being vulnerable is bad or something, but like, oh my goodness, how I've probably haven't thought about it in the way that you just framed it. I probably haven't really thought about that when people are coming into my home, probably in part because when we lived in Houston for 15 years, like a lot of the people we hosted were very dear friends that we had hosted over and over and over and over again. Some of that vulnerability begins to disappear, right? But now we're in a new city, just happened to make plans with some new friends here in a couple of weeks to have them over to the house, right? And I'm like, oh yeah, there might be, maybe not for everyone, but there might be some of those same feelings, apprehensions, vulnerabilities that you just talked about when people come into my home for the first time. I'm sorry. I'm feeling a little bit dense when I'm saying that, but I'm just like, oh my goodness, I want to keep that in mind more and care for people more, thinking, oh, there might be a vulnerability that they're feeling or experiencing, even if they may not be able to name it in that way. Because yeah, because I think that is some of the things that I feel when I go to someone else's house too. You kind of think, I don't know what the environment is like here necessarily, especially if it's the first time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the insight. I love what's, I want to say messing with your head a little bit. But also it's leading you to a place of being able to empathize with the guest,
100%.
right? And which leads you to seeing the guest, which leads you to meeting the guest where they are. And that ultimately is hospitality. Like to be able to see the people, to be able to know them, to be able to have some insight into what they might be experiencing so that you as the host can go back to what your grandmother did, which is making them feel like they're the most precious thing that came in. That they're more important than the food, they're more important than, the music that's on or whatever it is, that they're the most important. Now, I say all that and I will say, we hosted people a few weeks ago and I didn't do that. It was something for my husband's work, and I knew the people coming in, but I let my son answer the door and I stayed in the kitchen, right? We don't, this is why it's a practice. I know, I kind of hid. I kind of was grumpy about something. I don't even know what, and then I eventually got over myself and got to the point where when we were sitting at the table, we could enjoy and talk. And I let my husband take care of serving dessert and coffee and tea. And he was glad to. He's like, you just sit there. Because I knew the moment I stood up, everybody else would follow my lead. And I was like, no, I need to stay seated. But so I just share that story just to say, we are learning and practicing, and things come up too in us that just, we're like, well, that was like, Laura, you wrote a book on hospitality and you did not get a gold star for that one. I mean, and so it's not about that, but it is about looking back and go, what was going on there that I hid? Why did I hide? Why did I not go out to meet? And it was because I just wanted to make sure all the food was out and it was warm and, whatever it was. And deep down, Alexis, I think there was a part of me, and I'm figuring it out. I think I need to reflect on it and go, why did I want to hide? What was it in my identity? Or anyway, so I need to take that to my spiritual director. So
Well, it's like a it's like those dolls, that come open. It's like, I want to hang on this guest thing for a minute, because one of the things that you talk about in the book was Jesus choosing to be a guest. And I think there's like lots of stories. Like if we stop and think about gospel stories, even if you just take the low-hanging fruit of like miracle at the wedding at Cana kind of thing, like we see Jesus being a guest. We see Jesus being a guest a lot. We see when people are asking to go home with Jesus, he's like, yeah, that's not gonna happen. But people are receiving him, and we don't get the vibe that he's like not cool with it. Like we don't get the vibe that he's like, no, let me like whatever. Like I think if we kind of read into it a little bit, I mean, I think we get the vibe that he's like, yeah, like I mean, even inviting himself to Zacchaeus's house, like I'm gonna come hang out at your house. Like this was it, the way the gospels are told, this is, I mean, this is what we read about. It feels more common. It feels common for Jesus. It doesn't feel like something that was that was unusual. And oh my gosh, there's Laura, when I think about it, like there's so much that I like wish that we could cover. So I'll just say, listeners, go grab the book. About being hosted as humans. You talk about Jesus, you talk about creation, talk about all of these things, but like, but being hosted, maybe we start with Jesus at least, and him being hosted by others.
Yes, and I think that was his way of being human. I think as I mean he and he didn't enter as an adult, right? He entered in the most vulnerable way, and started in the most vulnerable way as he grew inside of Mary, as he came into the world. I mean, he was first hosted in her womb. That was his first place, and that was such a vulnerable place. And then as he entered the world, I mean, vulnerable to be raised by human parents, to be in a world that was full of brokenness and all these different things. I mean, you can read. So he chose to make himself vulnerable, and I think that's the thing as well, is that what that shows us is that we can also choose it, that vulnerability can be a choice. Now, sometimes we are pushed into places where we are vulnerable. So back to that conversation about home. But then there are ways that we can choose to be vulnerable as guests. And I do, one of the chapters in the book is God is the first host. And that when we follow Jesus's way of that vulnerability, that we receive, that we choose to receive, whether it's creation, whether it's others, and that God first hosted us. I mean, he created the world, he created us, and he hosted us in the world. And so a lot of the work that I do is helping people come into a posture of receiving. It's not bad to do. It's not bad to produce. It's not bad to do those things. But to be able to receive and to first receive, and then from that receiving, to be able to do and give, because that's our strength. Our strength is in receiving. Our strength is not in doing. And so to be able to receive that, and just, and it is throughout the Gospels that Jesus makes himself vulnerable and receives. And it, you know, if you go to Philippians, I mean, he had to lay down power in order to do so, right? I mean, so there's a lot in the Gospels. Once you start thinking about hospitality and guest and host and welcome, like you start reading those stories and you're like, oh my gosh, the dynamics are everywhere.
Can you say more about that phrase, our strength is in receiving? Because I think, especially, even as we have mentioned, just like American individualism and things like this, we're not really as communal as other cultures and societies. And receiving does not feel strong. Like receiving feels like a show of weakness.
Right.
Receiving can feel embarrassing. I mean, receiving can feel all sorts of things. Like I will, like, very short anecdote. I remember during the pandemic, early days of the pandemic, we had neighbors who had just moved in. Like, I'm talking like January or February of 2020.
Wow.
We did not know each other at all. But they had just moved in. And this was way back, if people remember, way back early 2020, when we're still trying to figure out, is it safe to go to the grocery store? Where, I mean, obviously we're masking when we can get out, things like that. And we're not out of the house very often. And she had two kids, and we had our kids. And I remember her knocking on the door one day, the mama of that house, and saying something like, I was at the store and I bought an extra gallon of milk and a bag of oatmeal for you guys. And I don't know what was wrong with me. Well, I do. I mean, my therapist could tell you. But anyway, it took everything in me to just receive that with joy and gratitude, because it felt not just vulnerable, it felt all of the other things that I was saying. I don't know if I would have said right then that it felt weak, but it was kind of like, no, I'm supposed to be the one who helps you. Why? I don't know. But I don't think that's specific to me. I feel like it's not, at least, that we might feel that way, like we're supposed to be the ones who give, not the ones who are taking. Maybe even Christian and I, as I was saying that, I'm hearing myself, it's blessed, more blessed to give than to receive, right? And so anyway, to say that there's strength in receiving, I don't think it's gonna, I don't think it's just messing with my head. I have a feeling it's probably messing with other people's heads too.
Yeah, because it's contradictory,
I feel
right? Like
like it is, yeah.
it is. It sounds contradictory, right? That in receiving, we are strengthened. A few things. One is, like, it takes on the lie that we are strong enough,
Oh,
or
yeah.
that all of our strength is in us, and that we don't need strength from outside, which is counter to the gospel. It's counter to. Right. I mean, I'm going to say all these things and be like, and it's counter to Jesus, and it's counter, and we know, we're like, oh yeah,
Yeah.
in our heads, yes. But it's this, it's, and I think that that's what Jesus does, right? He undoes these ways of being. So I think he's undoing something, right? This theology that we have about strength and weakness. But I think the other thing that he's doing is he's inviting us to a way of being loved. And I say that because your story includes a stranger who saw you, who thought of you, and who, I don't know what, I mean, probably like a $5 sacrifice, it's not, but gave up something of hers for you. And it wasn't really about the milk and the oatmeal. It was about her moving towards you and thinking of you and expressing care for you. Now that strengthens us in a part of ourselves that we can't explain. And that type of strength is love, that you are loved and thought of. And so when we are in these places of receiving, or weakness, or whatever it is, there are opportunities for us to receive somebody's thoughtfulness, somebody's love, and somebody's care. And that strengthens us deep within in a way that we can't make it a metric or explain, but it deepens who we are and it deepens our connection with that person as human beings. And so there is strengthening that's happening in us and in that relationship. And in that community. And so I think that's one way that we are strengthened in receiving.
Gosh, that's really good. Yeah, thank you for exploring that with me. Okay. I'm trying to think of what question I want to ask you next, but I think I want to ask about, you had a section in your book on endings. And initially, I will just go ahead and say it felt a little odd in a book on hospitality, to include a section on endings. But I think I get it, but I want to invite you to talk more about that again, because even as we open this is a broader expression of practicing hospitality than some of us might initially think of. So talk about why that and what's the connection to hospitality.
Thanks for asking that because I even talked to my editor about, do I end with the spiritual practice of confession? Do I end a book with that practice? I'm so used to liturgy, in worship services, that confession's kind of on the front end of things and things like that. I said, is this a strange place to end something? So your awkwardness is equally felt by me who wrote it. So but what I was exploring this with some Australian friends that have a great coffee shop here. And we were talking about welcome and hospitality, and they do it so well. And I explore more of what they talk about in the book, but we talked about endings and how endings often matter more than beginnings. And it's the moments that people remember. And it's when somebody says goodbye and thank you. It's when somebody, I'm in Texas, kind of sort of in the South, it depends on who you are, Some people call us Texans, some people call us Southern,
Yeah.
but you walk somebody to the door or you walk somebody to the car and you go, there's something about that last moment. And even you see in research and of being human, like we remember people's last words. Like there's something about those last moments that linger. And in those last moments, there are opportunities for connection and gratitude and, hey, I hope to see you again, or let's plan for next time. So it's like this opportunity to go, hey, let's do this again, or hey, you're welcome again. And so it's this continuity of welcome to that welcome wasn't just this moment and this time, but that welcome continues. And so I've often said, I was like, I think people in the church space, we need greeters that welcome. We need people that say goodbye. Like we need the goodbyers, you know? And
Yes.
so, but he said, my coffee shop friend, he said, you know, we call it closing the loop. And we have found that it is very important to close the loop as a sense of welcome for others. And I love when closings are possible, and sometimes they aren't, which makes it really hard for people, especially when they've lost somebody or when a relationship, you know, just all of a sudden no longer exists. Or let's just talk about ghosting. When you just get ghosted and abandoned, like that is just not a great feeling. And there's a sense in us as humans that we want some type of closure. And so in hospitality, you can close well with gratitude, but you can also close well when there's a restoration or repair needed. Think sometimes there's pain that happens in spaces. There's pains that happen between people. And so the work of repair is a way of restoring relationship. It's a way of welcoming somebody back into relationship. You see that in Jesus when he does that with Peter specifically. He does that with others as well, but you see that restoration and this reminder of no, we're connected. No, there is forgiveness here. We have reconciliation. And so what endings and closings do is they allow for new beginnings. And that really is, right, the life, death, and resurrection, right? Like that you live, something dies, or maybe we have to confess something, or we need to go restore something. And then there's a resurrection life you get to live into. And so living into that resurrection life. So those closings and endings allow for that. And for hospitality not to be a one-time event, for it to be ongoing.
This was another. You want to talk about confession? I'm confessing all of my things right now, Laura, because there was, I want to say it was here. I wrote, oh yeah. You have a sentence when you talk about Peter. I struggle with Peter sometimes. You know, I just do. I
I
struggle with
struggle with
Peter.
Paul, so yeah.
I struggle with Paul too. I struggle with Paul too. I struggle with Peter sometimes, but still the beach story of Peter is one of my favorites. But here's my confession. Yes, I have a seminary degree. Yes, I'm still in seminary. Yes, I've preached a handful of sermons. And you write, Peter had not been present for Jesus' death. And I had to read that about six times because I'm like, I guess that is the logical conclusion. I don't know. Is it like anytime I had ever imagined this, I don't know why. I see Peter hiding. I imagine him hearing the rooster. I imagine him having these conversations. I imagine all of this. But somehow my imagination omitted, has always omitted, I guess, that when Jesus is actually being crucified, he is not one of the ones who is present there. Like, there's a Some of Jesus' like real tight people are there. The women are there. We know that much. And I'm like, Peter's not there. I don't know. I guess probably because in their relationship, I had imagined that like it was one of those things where he like kind of got it together like before he actually, you know, like, but to think about Peter, I don't know, it just deepened that my imagined need for repair work. afterwards, you know, like even more. Like they were tight like this whole time. And it wasn't just like, I don't know, I guess maybe it was like kind of he got his act together before he was actually on his deathbed kind of thing, you know, like he had his moments, but like when it came down to it and when Jesus actually died, he was like probably sitting there. But I think you're right. And that like blew my mind to think about how, like, we know Peter didn't close that well. But I think I didn't realize like how I don't know. There was something in it where I was like, I like my note to the book on the bottom was, wait, what? Like that was my like
And
profound
Alexis,
annotation.
what you just said, like you assumed that he had gotten his act together and he showed up, you know, and we all make assumptions, right, in scripture. And but it shows like what we're thinking, right? That no, he didn't get anything together. Like he, and maybe he couldn't have. Who knows what he was feeling after those denials? Like who knows what was going on? We know that he was hiding. I mean, we know that you know he wasn't there. And I think the beauty of being people who are reconcilers or restorers and choosing, that is a beautiful way to be. A host that Jesus like is like, I know Peter didn't have his act together. I know he wasn't there. I know. And that actually, as a host, is a way of being vulnerable, right? To go,
Yeah,
I'm going to
oh, for
move
sure.
towards somebody who caused deep pain and who left and was absent. But I'm going to go remind them, this is how I see you. This is who you are. And this is how we are. Now, whether they accept it or not is another story, but that is a way that even as hosts, we're vulnerable. But to choose to use our power in that way, because power isn't just used negatively, it's used in really great ways. And so to be a host that can use it in such a positive way in hopefulness of restoration. I mean, that's really a lot of what that ending is choosing to go back and say, if I can, let's see if we can change this ending. Let's see if we can restore this ending and see what might become.
Like you said at the top of that, it's not always possible, but sometimes it is. Yeah, and that's a brave and vulnerable thing to explore that, when you think it might be. I want to ask you to, as we kind of start to wind down the conversation, I want to ask you to talk about, I'm going to use the word practicality. And I think for someone like me, I have a very dear friend who is a spiritual director, and I always remind her that I'm not a contemplative. Because I'm like, I know like the spiritual directors, and I'm like, it feels real easy for me to be like, yeah, that's one of these things is not like the other, and it's me. So when I say practicality, it feels a little bit different to me, maybe. But I will say, I wanted to ask you to talk about practicality, like the posture of hospitality. One of the things I say, I think it might be in the intro of this, I don't remember when I recorded a long time ago, but I talk about having the posture of a learner. You know, so I think we're familiar with kind of like posturing ourselves in a certain way. But one of the things that you do in this book, which is great, and it is, I think also practical, is that you close the chapters with, as we talked about at the beginning of even the subtitle, with spiritual practices. So I mentioned you're a spiritual director, and you kind of guide us through some practices that we could explore that have to do with whatever the chapters are. And I found myself, don't tell my friend because maybe she'll ask me about it, but I found myself dog earing some of these to say, oh yeah, even I could do that. You know, even I could, you know, even I could start to do that or look for something in these kinds of ways. So it's not like practical when I say that. It's not like you're Martha Stewart and you're going to tell us the best way to like arrange our stuff on a tray or something like that. Like this practical is broader and different. Than that, even in having a posture of hospitality. So, will you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I do like to be practical, and I also like to, I call them like beach entry practices. Like these are beach entry. Like we can all do it. We can walk in, right? I'm not throwing you cannonball into the deep end. Like
Love
go
that.
do this thing, right? And this probably has to do with, you know, as I'm getting older and stuff, I'm like, oh, those smaller, more consistent practices really build up something over time rather than the, you
Yes.
know, yes, you have big dynamic things too you can do, but you know, some of those smaller things really do add up. So,
Yes.
and I'm just practical because life. I mean, life, you know, family, work, I mean, just different things. So yes, very practical on that. They're shorter. They are reflective. So I'm going to ask you to be reflective on things, but a lot of them really require slowing down. So that's the main thing, slowing down. And in the slowing down, in the margin making, just noticing, like, noticing what you tend to do, noticing how you respond. So there is a lot of reflection. But the idea is that your posture doesn't change overnight. Your posture changes over time. So even if you think about your physical posture, right? You will do small exercises to get to a posture that you need to get to, or you'll have things that help you to do that. And so these practices are meant to help in your posture. And what that means is that you carry it with you wherever you go, right? Just like your physical posture, you're carrying it with you wherever you go, that you're carrying hospitality with you. And it might include small things like, you know, this is going to sound horrible to some people, but instead of going to the self-checkout lane in the grocery store, or instead of doing like a pickup order, like you go and you actually get in line with a person. And you ask them just in the few minutes, like how their day is, right? So you slow down. You slow down in conversation with a family member, right? You sit down and you ask them to explore. I'm at the place where I'm shifting from, well, I should have shifted a long time ago, but I'm still trying to shift from answering my kids' questions or responding to my kids' questions with an answer rather than responding to my kids' questions with curiosity, because they are at the age where answers are not what they're looking for anymore. And they're again long beyond that, but I'm still trying to solve things. And so as I'm in my questions even of them, or in my tell me more, right, that I'm opening up a space for them to share rather than me assuming that I'm going to solve something. So that's another way to do it. So there's all these little just daily practices, and then there's the practices in the book that just over time, you find yourself being strengthened, and then maybe one day you surprise yourself. You're like, oh, wait, I allowed more space in that time. I got to see something about that person that I didn't notice before. I got to ask them something. I got to explore with them. And so usually those things catch us by surprise after some time of practicing.
I saw a meme last night. I told my husband, I'm like, oh my goodness, this is so me. And it said something like, I just went to Trader Joe's and the cashier didn't ask me how my day was and didn't comment that he liked one of the items that I was buying. Is he mad at me? It's like, but that's one of the things, even like you talk about your coffee friends, you know, your Australian coffee friends. It's like sometimes we realize maybe after the fact that that's why we appreciate going to a place, you know, so much is like there's all these little like practices of hospitality where you're like, I'll go to Trader Joe's over going to Walmart if I need to run in and grab a couple of GF items because partially because, you know, like the store is smaller or the people are going to be so helpful or someone's going to say, how am I? And ooh, I love that popcorn too. And you just maybe don't think about it or maybe. You know, you're like, oh, that doesn't really make much of a difference, but it really
It
you
does,
know, but it really
yeah.
does. But it really does on both sides, you know, because as you
Yes.
mentioned, we're interconnected, and receiving is strengthening, and all of those things. I will just mention one practice that I did dog ear that felt very doable for me, which was the centering prayer.
Okay,
I
yeah.
thought, oh, when I was first introduced to centering prayer, I was like, I cannot do this. Like, I cannot. There's nothing about me. And I tried it a few times, and I'm like, I cannot do centering prayer. But the way that you described it, I thought, I could do that. Yeah, I really think I could. I think I could do 10 minutes instead of 25. I think I could, you know, I could do, yeah, I could read this short passage and come back to this. But it felt very doable, but also it was, as you described, it was very good for me to revisit that in spiritual practices, it's the same, very similar as in some of these physical practices. Yes, we all say, oh, I'll park a little further out, or I'll take the stairs instead of the elevator, or whatever. And it's like, no, that's not going to make us like Iron Man triathlete, but it is going to make a difference in, you know, just how we live our lives and whether or not our watches beep at us and, you know, things like that. And so these little ones, like, wow, how might we encounter God's presence, or how might we become a welcoming presence for others when I take this moment to like spiritually just take the stairs, or, you know, park a little further out more often than not, you know, how might that make a difference?
I will say I love that you chose a receiving practice. I'll just say that. Just notice how that you're drawn to
Thank
that.
you. I'm trying, and I didn't even think about it, but now I will, that it was, yeah, that it
Yeah.
was a receiving one. Laura, I'm wondering, if you would, maybe I don't want to like put this last little bit in a box for you, but I'm trying to think of, kind of a welcoming way to end this. And I'm wondering if maybe there's a question that you could leave us with, like something that might pique our own curiosities about our own contexts or practices, that would get our minds and spirits stirring, when it comes to the practice and posture of hospitality. Yeah, something that maybe we could ask ourselves or ask of God when we spend, time this week as we go about our week about hospitality and our context or practices.
The question that comes up for me is, who does God already have that is offering you a space of hospitality, a space of welcome, a space of being known? And to be able to notice those people and to be able to receive from those people and not to kind of push it off or say no big deal, but truly to be able to savor somebody else's seeing and welcoming of you. So just say, look around and see who there might be.
That's good. Thank you. Laura, I'm so thrilled to share this space with you today. The name of the book, again, is Becoming a Person of Welcome: The Spiritual Practice of Hospitality. And I will have the link to where people can grab a copy of that in the show notes. And I encourage people to do that. It's a short volume, but it is really fun and meaningful to read. The stories are great, and also the questions and practices are really great too. So, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
The links for all the resources mentioned in today's episode can be found in the show notes. Music and podcast production by Seth Busetti. Be sure to give us a review on iTunes and subscribe at your favorite podcast listening app. You can also visit us at thatmakestotalsense.com.